For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show. 7 minutes after the hour here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. In approximately 1 hour, we will give away another prize, courtesy of our St. Louis Conservative Christmas. Winners are announced every day on every show. How do you win one of these fantastic prizes? Simply go to newstalkstl.com, newstalkstl.com, and register. You can click on big old Santa Vic, and you can register as many times as you would like. We've been giving away a lot of great prizes to a lot of great people. Thank you all so much for participating, and we've got our prize winner for today that we will announce just after 5:05, 5:06 or so. You'll hear the Christmas music, and then the winner will be announced. Chris, there's so much news to get to. We didn't get, I don't know if we had a chance to talk about this. Yet another Border Patrol agent was killed in the line of duty. Outgoing Congresswoman Myra Flores. She won the special election. She did not win in the general. I have a feeling we haven't seen the last of her, but, she was talking about that, and she knows what she's discussing because not only is she a Hispanic American woman, Republican Congresswoman, she's also married to a Customs and Border Patrol agent. And I don't hear anybody other than some folks on Newsmax and Fox News and us talking about this catastrophe at Joe Biden's border.
Yeah, and I think the catastrophe, as you say, that's going on at the border, the illegal crossings, 2 million in 1 year, 5 million since Joe Biden's presidency, is a big reason why we had a huge story this morning of Kristen Sinema changing her party registration from Democrat to independent. She has not said who she is going to caucus with, either the Democrats or Republican. I suspect that she will probably vote 80% with the Democrats. But there will be times, especially with border issues, that she's going to sign with Republicans. And I think that's a good thing, hopefully. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah, wouldn't you love to see, this won't happen, of course, but wouldn't you, this is a big deal for a, there's only 100 sitting U.S. senators at any given time in our country. There's only 100 of them. They're very powerful people, two per state. This is a big deal, especially in a Senate that is a basically, you know, nearly divided body. It was 50-50 last term. I guess it's kind of 51.5 now, depending on what Sinema does on any given day. It's a big deal when a senator says, I'm not going to serve under the party in which I was elected under. I am leaving that party. It's one thing for Tulsi Gabbard to do it now that she's a former congresswoman. It's another thing for a sitting U.S. senator to do it. Wouldn't you like to see, Chris, some exposés on CNN and MSNBC and NBC and ABC this weekend about what made it so bad for a progressive like Kristen Sinema that she's leaving the Democratic
Party?
Well,
I think it's quite simple. The border, the cape that we just played, the president doesn't care about the border. She's in a border state. It's being overran. She's up for election in 2024. So I think that it is to her benefit to run away from the Democratic Party and run away from the president and their record.
Mm-hmm. Now, why did Mark Kelly, I guess my question is, why wouldn't she look at Mark Kelly's election and go, he ran as a Democrat. He won rather handily in Arizona. He kept his mouth shut and his head down, and he was just reelected.
I think what she'll say is she won't be as lucky as he was to have a terrible candidate to run against. So she's like, I better go and tack towards the center, run away from Trump, run away from Biden, run away from the Democrats, and call myself an independent.
Mm. Yeah, we'll see how this works out for her because, you know, running as an independent, it has worked a few times in recent history. Bernie Sanders is an independent. There was a fellow named Angus something or other.
Angus King.
He was from what, New Hampshire?
He's from Maine.
And Murkowski ran as an independent and then ran as a Republican again. So it's rare. And we'll see if somebody can run as an independent and win. I'm assuming if she runs as an independent, there will likely be a Democrat running in Arizona, and there'll likely be a Republican, all to be named later.
You know, a big part of this story is, too, I read a lot of insider Washington tip sheets, and there was no mention of this anywhere. This was totally off the radar screen. It's very hard to keep a secret in Washington, and it's amazing that they kept this under wraps and no one knew about this. I was on Newsmax this morning, 5:30, 6:30 on the East Coast, and that's what they opened the segment with, this announcement, and I was shocked. I hadn't heard it, and the host said that this was just announced 15 minutes prior. So they announced that at 6 a.m. Eastern time. So the Christian, it was a big surprise.
The cinema thing?
Yes.
I remember seeing it late last night.
Was it last night?
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
she was on CNN late last night.
They were telling us that it just came across to them like 15 minutes.
I was probably already in bed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I saw it this morning when I woke up through the Springfield show, and all of a sudden Fox News is running a CNN clip of Kristen Sinema doing an interview with, I don't know if it was Dana Bash or Jake Tapper or who it was. Mm. And I was kind of surprised. And then I remembered a story. I don't know that this was as much of a surprise. I think we forgot. Do you remember we talked about this back in September? Kristen Sinema attended a fundraiser in Kentucky with Mitch McConnell. So Kristen Sinema was at a Republican Party fundraiser in Kentucky with the Republican Senate leader. So she kind of sent a flare up back in September. And then, of course, with the elections, everybody forgot about it.
Mm-hmm. I don't see her switching to a Republican Party. If you look,
no,
at her,
I didn't say that. Okay. I don't think she will. Okay. But I think she sent a flare up. Look, Democrat U.S. senators don't hang out with majority leaders of the opposite party and go to their home state and do fundraisers.
But she's also been very independent and shown that she will not toe the Democratic line. So her being with McConnell, you know,
well, I think that was
unusual.
I think it was a huge signal that she was not happy with the Democratic Party. You know,
I think voting against your leader shows that as well.
Yeah, well, I don't think Elizabeth Warren's going to go to a Mitch McConnell fundraiser anytime soon.
She's not voting against her leader.
Who voted against the leader?
Sinema. She didn't go along with the filibuster and a lot of their stuff.
Right. So therefore, we should have known this was coming then. Like a year ago then. I thought the biggest sign was her hanging out with Mitch McConnell, but you just reminded me that she voted against Schumer. So she's been signaling for a long time. That she was probably going to leave the Democratic Party.
Because remember, her and Manchin were always the wild cards. Anything the Democrats did, they got to make sure that Manchin and Sinema are on board.
And now Manchin has had some power returned to him now.
He has.
He now is like the 50th and a half senator, right? Because he was largely going to be forgotten, and I heard he got screwed again, right, last week. They were supposed to pass a bill, they didn't.
He agreed to sign on the Build Back Better if they would pass a permitting bill to allow more drilling and coal exploration, and they totally reneged on it.
In West Virginia?
Yeah, they totally reneged on it afterwards. So they were trying to revive a permitting bill at the end, and Republicans are like, no, dude, because they needed Republicans to pass this. And Republicans are like, you know, we're not going to get the votes for you to help you after you screwed us.
Yeah, Republicans totally boofed the football in the election. But I'm happy to see that Democrats are now not going to have such an easy go of it that they thought they were going to have.
It is, because all we've been hearing since the election is the Democrats are celebrating Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden are geniuses, and look at all of the turmoil in the Republican Party. They can't pick a leader. Mitch McConnell's under fire. Well, now they've got a real brouhaha in their own caucus with one of their senators has left their caucus, and she hasn't said who she's going to caucus with, Democrat or Republican.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I also saw in a bunch of the stories this morning that she has not yet, well, maybe she's decided in her mind, but she has not announced whether she's running again in 2024. Mm. So that could add a whole different kerfluffle
and
to the equation.
And that gives even more heartburn to Schumer and the Democrats, because if she's not running for re-election, what does she have to lose to take some controversial votes for Democrats?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's another wild card for
that's
her.
That's a really good point. If she's got some other... Look, I think Kristen Sinema, from everything I've read about her, is a very smart person. And she may be playing four-dimensional chess here, and she may already have a plan for what she's doing 2 years from now. It may be running for the U.S. Senate, but it may be doing something else. Chris, to your point, if she's decided to do something else, then she's going to be a total free agent. And the Democrats may find that they're feeling that they were going to have such an easy, well, not easy, easier go of things she may have just thrown a gigantic wrench into the works.
If she's not running for re-election, this will be a two-year legacy-building campaign where she will try to get her name on a lot of stuff and to say, I was the big moderate, I was the big middle of the road to get this done, the big things for the American people. We know the rhetoric. So that may be what she may be doing.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys talk yesterday about the Brittany Griner? I know you talked about the Brittany Griner mm-hmm. story. Did you talk about the fact that NBC once again had a story out there about this prisoner exchange, and then it was scrubbed again, kind of like the Paul Pelosi story was scrubbed? Did you guys talk about that?
No, I didn't hear that.
So
we didn't do the specifics about Andrea Mitchell, if that's what you're thinking.
Well,
I think she had reported it.
Laura Ingraham last night had a screenshot of an NBC story, and I don't remember, there was two reporters on the story, and she had the screenshot of the headline before they scrubbed it. She's got really good producers. And the headline was, Russia states that the U.S. may have Griner or Whalen or neither. So the suggestion is that Russia did give the Biden White House a choice.
I'll read it for you specifically. The Kremlin gave the White House the choice of either Griner or Whalen or none.
So when
that was the original.
That was the original NBC headline.
So when will we be seeing reports from all these CIA chiefs saying that's Russian propaganda?
The 51
from NBC.
Yeah. They'll put out a statement saying that's Russian propaganda.
So NBC is now a puppet of Putin. I guess the question is,
and the follow up, Tim, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay.
And the follow up, like you said, was the change to the copy was the Kremlin ultimately gave the White House the choice of either Griner or no one.
Mm-hmm.
So Whelan's name was gone.
So the question is that no one will ask of NBC is, were you wrong? Was that an inaccurate headline, or was the White House lying?
Mm-hmm.
Who's telling us the truth, basically?
You know, let's step back away from this and take away the Democrat and the Republican and the politics of it, and just look at this as a leader and as a human being. And I'm not making any judgments here, but what do you do, guys? I mean, you're president of the United States, and here's a person that's been over there 4 years, another person that's been over there 10 months. Who knows how they're being treated? They're American citizens. What do you do if you're faced with that choice, one or the other? Do you leave them both? Do you say, no, it's either both or the other, and who knows how long they may languish over there? Do you choose one or the other? It looks like what the Biden administration did was, we're going to choose Brittany Griner, and we think we're going to get better publicity and less flack over time for doing that than leaving her there and bringing home the Marine if we can. But take the politics, take the partisanship out of it, and just being a leader, what do you do?
So I think they made for themselves, the Biden administration, I think they made for themselves a great political decision. I think they made a horrible decision as far as future foreign diplomacy. This is a horrible, bad precedent. I think Bob Gates, if you asked him about this, would say that Joe Biden has continued his tenure as making the worst decisions ever of any leader in the nation. We've now basically said that you can grab any American you want. They can be a great person, a horrible person, very important, not important, and we'll just give the farm away to you. Yeah. We gave a known terrorist arms dealer who has slaughtered Americans back to the Russians right in the middle of a European war. Talk about being a puppet mm-hmm. of Putin.
You President know, Pontikas?
If it were me, I would have said to the Russian delegation, all right, if we're going to make this deal and you want this guy back, who's an arms merchant, then give us four people that
what
are.
What do they say? Nit.
Yeah.
Nit.
Then you say fine.
Then I would say fine. Okay. Then we'll move on. Because I believe that they would still come back to the table a few months later, and we would have another discussion. And regarding Griner's situation, I think they were just checking off the boxes, because Jean-Pierre went right down the list in the press conference and said, oh, you know, this is so wonderful. Yeah. And then she went down, bam, 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 the list of everything that Griner fits for the cultural narrative of the Democratic Party. And then all of a sudden, oh, okay, right, everything's fine.
All right, here's another wrinkle, Tim, and you're a prosecutor. A lot of proponents of letting Brittany Griner say that Boot had been in federal custody. He had served 85% of his sentence. That's usually what you have to serve. He should have been or was probably going to be let go anyway. What do you say to those folks?
I still think we've set a bad precedent. We made a bad decision here.
And I say, let me put it, because people say that's not my position. I'm throwing it out there. Yeah. That's the talk. So that's not what I'm saying.
Because here's another example. So some really good reporters, in addition to Peter Ducey, and it's not just me that's critical of this. There's been a ton of reporters, some of whom I probably disagree with on just about everything else, have been peppering Jean-Pierre with a bunch of similar situations. Did you know there's about 50 Americans being held hostage around the globe right now? There's another American that's being held in Russia for a marijuana charge, and he's been there longer than Brittany Griner.
But can he shoot a 15-foot jumper?
Who cares? How many people knew Brittany Griner's name before this matter?
I have to admit, I didn't. Very few. I just think.
Look, what if we're going to play the what if game? What about this hypothetical? What if Paul Whelan, who I understand is not in good health, and God forbid this happens, but what if he passes away in the next few months in Russian custody?
And here's a wrinkle. Mr. Whelan's brother said he has no problem with Brittany Griner being released, that if we can let an American go, he said he's okay with that now, and then do everything you can, please, to get my brother out.
I think the family has to say that because they don't want to give Putin any other reasons to keep Whelan.
You know, the clip that I heard from Whelan, and I don't know when it was recorded, he said, "I've got my bags packed. Bring a plane over here. I'm ready to go." And I look at someone like Bill Richardson, who's a former, I think, New Mexico governor, who's been involved in
Democrat. UN ambassador.
Yes.
He's had a lot of roles. Energy secretary. He's had a lot of roles.
Yeah.
Democrats.
Democrat.
And I guess he's been involved in a lot of these hostage negotiation situations over the years. And from my perspective, I think he screwed it up.
And the other problem with Whelan is I haven't found a report that says that anybody believes he's actually guilty of what they're holding him for. We can all agree that Griner's punishment was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It was insane. And I'm glad she's coming home. I'm really glad she's coming home.
But that is their law.
It is their law.
And she knew it.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is Griner did something unlawful.
Yeah.
Nobody can say that Whelan did anything other than be a former Marine attending a wedding, and Putin was like, "Oh, there's a pigeon for us." Mm-hmm. And I think that's why he was grabbed, just because of who he is, not because of anything he did. All right, excellent discussion. So much so that I just lost track of time. Let's get to the break here. Zach Smith, boy, do we have a lot of legal matters for our super legal to fly in here and answer us for. A lot of Supreme Court matters going on this week that we'll talk to Zach about next. He's from the Heritage Foundation, and he joins Chris and I on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 101.9/94.1 News Talk Castile.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Elon Musk is doing just fine.
But do you think that users have a right to freedom of speech, even if what they're saying is wrong or offensive?
I think that one human being should not decide how millions of people communicate with each other. One human being should not be able to go into a dark room by himself and decide, oh, that person gets heard from, that person doesn't. That's not how it should work.
Well, not now, right, Chris? But I guess last year she was okay with Jack Dorsey and Zuckerberg and everybody else deciding what to do as we approach the 2020 election.
Yes, it's like, uh-oh, double standard, hypocrisy. Imagine that. Democrats are all in the same.
Mm-hmm. We're seeing that a lot in the system of justice that seems to have two tiers with that as well. Let's bring in our legal and talk about a lot of the legal matters of the week and beyond. Zach Smith, legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation.
You know, I ask you a lot of predictions. Can you predict what the Supreme Court probably will do with this action?
As he does every Friday afternoon, Zach Smith swoops in here once again to save us from ourselves. Zach Smith of the Heritage Foundation at tzsmithheritage.org. Zach, good afternoon. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you both for having me back on.
Always.
Zach, would you encapsulate for our listeners the hugely important free speech case that was heard at the Supreme Court this week? Seems like, Zach, that the good old state of Colorado just can't keep itself out of the court, can it?
No, it cannot. Look, this is really a follow-on case from the Masterpiece Cake Shop case that the court heard several years ago, where basically a cake baker in Colorado in that Masterpiece Cake Shop case was essentially being required by the state of Colorado to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding. Now, Jack Phillips, the baker, he said, look, I'm happy to serve anyone who comes to the door. I serve gay and lesbian individuals just like I serve anyone else. But because of my religious beliefs, I cannot serve or endorse, essentially, a same-sex marriage. And so the court heard that case. They found in favor of Jack Phillips, but they kind of skirted the big issue, the free speech issue, whether or not forcing Jack Phillips to bake the cake would violate his First Amendment rights. So essentially, a similar case is back before the court now. They heard oral arguments earlier this week, and it involves Rory Smith, a website designer in Colorado. And so in this case, the First Amendment free speech issue is squarely before the court. Everyone agrees that Rory Smith's business of writing websites, making content for them, is speech. And so the question the justices are going to have to decide is whether the state of Colorado can force Rory Smith to make a website for a same-sex wedding, even though she says to do that would violate her own sincerely held religious beliefs. So this is a very important case. It'll have broad implications in many, many areas because it is a free speech case, not a free exercise case. And so it'll be very interesting to see what the justices do.
Zach, we touched on this a little bit last week. It was the North Carolina redistricting case that is before the Supreme Court. And I thought it was a bit of hyperbole when former Attorney General Holder said that this theory that says that only state legislatures can draw district boundaries and the courts don't have anything to do with it could be a dismantling of democracy. Now, I didn't know that much in depth about it till I read about it later, but is that basically the case? It would take that a power away from the courts to decide gerrymandering and leave that totally to the state legislatures?
Chris, do you mean to tell me Eric Holder was fear-mongering and using hyperbole?
Yes.
I'm shocked, to hear it. But look, I think that is an overblown statement. Fortunately, we're hearing that from many on the left. Mm-hmm. Essentially, what is at issue in this Moore versus Harper case is who has the power under the U.S. Constitution to draw congressional districts, okay. Set rules and regulations for federal elections. And so what happened in this case is the North Carolina State Legislature, they drew a congressional map, the state Supreme Court using four amorphous clauses in the North Carolina state constitution threw out that map and implemented one of their own. This is kind of a new power that the state court found under the state constitution. And so the state legislature said, look, the state court can't do this using the state constitution because the federal constitution says that we, the legislature, are supposed to draw the make rules and regulations regarding federal elections, essentially. And so it's not fair to say that the legislature's power would be completely unreviewable in the courts. It's also not fair to say, and it's somewhat of a misnomer to call this case the independent state legislature theory, because the framers of the Constitution provided a check on the legislature's power in the Constitution itself. It said inappropriate cases, Congress can step in and basically override a state legislature's decisions about how to regulate federal elections. It's something Congress has rarely done, but that power is there, and that is a check the framers provided on the state legislatures.
Speaking to you, Zach Smith of the Heritage Foundation at tzsmithheritage.org. Zach, we saw a breaking news update just about an hour ago or so that a federal court, I don't know if you've seen this yet or not, a federal court blocked the Biden administration's mandate that was forcing religious hospitals to facilitate gender transition. Zach, could you remind our listeners what this was all about and what this might mean for the future of this latest horrible executive action?
Well, I only saw the news flash across my Twitter feed quickly. I haven't had a chance to dig into it yet. But look, this is part of the broader effort by the Biden administration to use the federal administrative state to essentially force compliance on many Americans with many of their most radical policies. We've seen this with different CMS, you know, Centers for Medicaid Services, different federal agencies, the Department of Veterans Affairs, through VA hospitals, trying to provide abortions in states that otherwise outlaw them. You know, there have been suggestions that the Biden administration would try to open up different health care centers on federal land in states that prohibit abortions. So just a whole host of very problematic policies that the Biden administration is trying to implement using the federal administrative state, often in a way that is either not statutorily or constitutionally authorized. I know we've talked about this a lot before in the student loan context, in the vaccine mandate context, in the eviction moratorium context. You know, this is a continuing pattern with this administration, and this effort that was being challenged in this case was just part of that larger effort. So I'm glad to see that a federal court has stepped in and stopped it from taking effect.
Sorry about that. Zach, a couple of weeks ago, Missouri put to death a inmate who had murdered a police officer when he was 19 years old. And he was 37 years old at the time when that happened. Of course, the death penalty is very, very controversial. A lot of people are against it. There's a clause in the Constitution that says that is against cruel and unusual punishment. How come the death penalty, especially in these times, is not considered cruel and unusual punishment? And you think that could be a court ever decide that? May the Supreme Court ever determine that, do you think?
Well, the court certainly could determine that, but if they did decide that the death penalty was unconstitutional under that Eighth Amendment's cruel and unusual clause, I think that would be an atextual decision that flies in the face of what the Constitution says and flies in the face of what the Founding Fathers intended. You know, this is an issue that has been litigated hundreds of times, literally hundreds of times. Every time there's a death row inmate, they bring some form of this cruel and unusual punishment claim. But Justice Antonin Scalia, he had a great rejoinder to this. You know, how can something today be cruel and unusual punishment under the Constitution that was in effect at the time the Constitution was adopted? Capital punishment certainly existed at the time the Constitution was adopted, and every state in the Union, or nearly every state in the Union at that time, used capital punishment as a form of punishment. In fact, if you go all the way back to common law, Chris, all felonies at common law were capital offenses. So you necessarily were put to death. Now, today, the Eighth Amendment cruel and unusual punishment claims are often deal more with the method of execution, whether certain methods of execution are cruel and unusual, lethal injection, the gas chamber. You know, there are many iterations of that. But this is a debate that I'm sure will continue in the future. But to say categorically that the death penalty would be cruel and unusual under the Eighth Amendment, I think that is not an outcome that would be supported by the Constitution.
Zach, you've got some great stuff in the SCOTUS 101 blog this week, right? Including a breakdown of the case that Chris just asked you about, Moore v. Harper, and some other matters, too.
Yeah, we did. We talked about the 303 Creative. That's the Colorado website case. We talked about Moore versus Harper. We also talked about a couple of the upcoming cases that the court will hear as well. The student loan case, where the Biden administration's student loan forgiveness plan is being challenged. My colleague, John Carlo, also had a great interview with Judge Paul Kelly. He's a senior judge on the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. And then we did a little Supreme Court trivia at the end of the episode. And so if anyone is interested to know what Tom Brady or Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, connection is to the Bush v. Gore case out of Florida in 2000, take a listen to the
episode. Oh, wow. That's a good tease. You may have a job in the radio business there, Zach, if this law scholar thing doesn't work out.
I'm learning from the best.
Zach, thank you. As always, we encourage folks to check out the SCOTUS 101 blog that you do often during the Supreme Court term and to follow you at TZ Smith on Twitter. Zach, thanks so much for joining us as always.
Have a great weekend.
Of course. I hope you both have a good weekend too.
Take care. Thank you, sir.
There he goes, Zach Smith of the Heritage Foundation. All right, it's 4:42, moving rapidly with you towards the weekend. Thank you for joining us this afternoon on your drive home or while you're out and about. This is 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL and Chris's Corner.
Yeah, we're next. It is. We're going to talk about the declaration that I made on Newsmax this morning.
Stay tuned for that. When we come back, Chris in the Corner at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Sharp Show, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, 4:47 in the PM. This is from one of my favorite Sting albums.
I had this 1991. This came out, I think. Remember the CD? It wasn't in a regular plastic CD. It was in this recyclable cardboard like stuff. But I loved Sting's music.
Soul cages. Yeah, and you're right. It was like an accordion style thing where you would kind of eat warming up.
And if you remember, Tim, that was a very dark album. If you really listen to the lyrics of that song,
yes.
And the background was Sting's father had died when he wrote the lyrics for that album. And if you remember a lot of those songs, he talks about my father is in a lot of the lyrics, and his father had died during that
period. Yes, it's a very haunting album.
It is. It really is. I love it.
It's a very powerful... I love it, too. There's a couple good, really good songs in there. Really powerful songs when you're ever in a good melancholy mood. Mm-hmm. Hey, I got another album for you. I don't know if you caught this one. It was a bit of an eclectic Sting album. Maybe we can play some of it, Stell, going into the and the Christmas holidays. He did a kind of a non-Christmas album. Mm-hmm. It was kind of more of a wintry theme, but there's definitely a lot of religious overtones.
Is that the one with
we played it last year?
Soul Cages.
We played it last year.
Yeah.
The Christmas not Christmas album.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mm. It's kind of more of a folk kind of album. They're not really traditional Christmas songs, but they're very powerful. They're almost spiritual songs, Chris. There's the one we played. You're right. We played Soul Cake from that.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a really good album. It's called On a Winter's Night, still.
Mm. Okay.
It's got a very Sting album. You know, the joke with my friends and I in college was like, Sting just knows he's the coolest guy on the planet. Like, anything he does is the coolest thing ever. And, of course, the album cover is, because of course he is, he's like walking in a wood with snow on the ground and these sycamore trees, and he's all by himself, because of course he is, and there's this dog that looks like a wolf walking next to him, because of course it is. You know, it's just like, I'm Sting. I'm in the woods with a wolf.
It's like a Narnia scene.
On a cold winter's night.
Was he like Putin and didn't have a shirt on and bare-chested?
He had clothes on.
I need to do it a Putin. Hey, before we start Chris's Corner, I got to give a shout-out to listener Julie, who is the psychic guest on the Tony Colombo and Katie show in the afternoon. She said on Twitter that she absolutely hates the beginning of Chris's Corner, the Chris song.
How could anyone?
She doesn't like... I like Chris's Corner, but I hate Chris. So Katie put up a poll on Twitter. I think it's closed to see if listeners hate Chris. She was going to call in around this time, but she got a client. So she said maybe she'll call in later in the show. Because I said, you got to call in. I want to talk. We need to talk. Why do you hate Chris? Because when I came up with that to send to Katie for the promo, I thought that was the most wittiest thing I ever came up with.
I think it's hilarious.
For a year, and Julie hates it. But so Julie, Chris's Corner is about to begin. You may want to turn your radio down for about 15 seconds, because here we go.
Chris.
The whole thing is a joke.
Good God, we gotta do something here, people.
It's not personal, it's strictly business.
My favorite black leader of all time is Frederick Douglass, who asked after emancipation, well, we just freed the blacks, now what are we going to do? And his answer was, leave us alone.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
You know, as we all know by now, Elon Musk has released Twitter 2.0 files of just all the shenanigans that were going on at Twitter before he bought it. The revelations that we learned today, that there was a thing called shadow banning, and then also blacklisting of certain conservatives. There are screenshots to prove it. Dan Bongino was a victim of this. The gentleman that has a radio show show.
Charlie Kirk. Yes.
He was a victim of this. And I want to say personally, and I'm not trying to throw myself into their realm, because I'll be the first to say I am not a huge tweeter. I tweet very occasionally. But I think I was shadow banned because my followers do not grow at all. I know I don't tweet very often, but is it out of the realm to think that Twitter doesn't want a black conservative who has a radio show and who is on Newsmax and writes the Red State and is not on the plantation, and some of us say that they would shadow ban or throttle of my tweets? I think they do. Mm-hmm. And we have had proof, as I said, that Dan Bongino and Charlie Kirk have been throttled. You know, I always say I am a full-blooded, red-blooded capitalist. My parents were business owners growing up, and I learned the value of hard work and entrepreneurship, and I want to see free enterprise, and I want to see competition. Well, I made a declaration this morning that I believe that the big social media, big tech platforms like Facebook and YouTube and Twitter, they need to be regulated like utility monopolies. They are monopolies. They monopolize information just like utilities monopolize gas and electric. They're monopolies the same way that during the Gilded Era, Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan ran the banks, the railroads, the coal, the cars. They believed in laissez-faire capitalism, but we saw what it wrought. I'm all for capitalism, but I think when you have a total monopoly, like those Gilded Age businesses did at the time, in the way that social media has a monopoly on information, I think you have to regulate them in a way that's fair for all people. They are a public monopoly, in a sense. I mean, when a platform has the power to shut down a news story from the oldest newspaper in the country, and they're able to say that this is propaganda, that's just too much power for one company to have. I'm sorry. We're also seeing revelations that the government colluded with big tech in advance, telling them that stories like Hunter Biden were coming out, calling them Russian disinformation. The collusion between big business and government is sickening, and I alluded to it yesterday in Chris's Corner when I said it's similar to what we see with the media and with big government. It's a revolving door. It's also now seems to be a revolving door when it comes to big tech and big business. You know, between the segments on Newsmax, Senator Santorum made a very interesting insight that is true. He says, if you remember back in the Gilded Ages, J.P. Morgan, all of them were Republicans, and they were capitalists, they were businessmen. Well, now in the 21st century, that has completely shifted. All of the billionaires and the big tech entrepreneurs and hedge fund managers, they're progressive liberals, and they have the money, and they are funding these Democratic campaigns. It's been a complete shift. You know, you can look back at elections from 2012 on. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, they received more money from Wall Street and hedge funds than Republicans do now. And that is a big danger when you have big tech with all of their money, you know, that's in cahoots with the government and with the political party. That's too much power. And I believe that these should be regulated. These platforms should be regulated like public utilities. And I'd like to get your thoughts on it. 314-912-1019. 314-912-1019. Is that too much heavy-handedness in private enterprise? I don't know. Tim, Stell, what do you guys think?
I agree.
Yeah, you know, I think Raphael Warnock outraised Herschel Walker 2-1, and it didn't all come from $5 donations from college kids.
They'll tell you that.
Mm. Right. A lot of it does, but not the heavy duty. Yeah, I really want to, like, I'm so conflicted on this. I really want to argue with you about this, but on the other hand, I agree with you. I mean, it's like, because I feel the same way you do. As someone who is a very laissez-faire free marketeer, I want the market to sort these things out. But, Chris, the market has failed to sort these things out. And look, here's the problem with the tech companies.
And our democracy is at stake.
Yeah, and talk about threats to democracy. Yeah. The left says that we're the threat to democracy. They're actually the ones threatening democracy.
When you can stop stories that would sway an election,
that's a threat
to
democracy.
You are a threat to democracy.
Yes, yes, that's the definition of it. And
when you can delete things like Parlor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take them out of
the app shops and shut down their people's access to these apps.
And what you're ultimately referring, Chris, is referring to Section 230.
Yes.
Here's my problem. You can't say that you have the right to the benefits of Section 230 and then constantly violate the letter and the spirit of that law.
Yes.
You're either a publisher or you're not.
But Tim, I do. I want a repeal of Section 230, but I also want them regulated as monopolies. I want their records opened up so we can, and I want them audited to see, are they blacklisting people? Are they shutting down their access? I want those records to have to be open.
And every time they push back, and look, I've got a lot of friends who work for a lot of the big tech companies, and some are conservatives, and they say, oh, but Tim, you know, the arguments you just talked about with the free market and all that. And I say, yeah, but every time you guys convince us of that, you then go and commit one of these inherent evils. You are colluding with the government, which means you are acting as an arm of the government, which means you were violating the First Amendment. They always say, well, you know, private companies are not subject to the First Amendment. That's true. But if you're working with the government, then guess what? You become an extension. Under the law, you become an agent of the principal, and you are violating the Constitution. You are violating the First Amendment.
So that's why
stop doing the things that you keep saying that you're not doing.
So that's how they can get some of these Twitter executives for breaking the law, because they were extensions of the government with their collusion.
That's the legal argument I would make. Kristen, in corporate law, it's called piercing the corporate veil. And I think you can do that for
sure. Do it.
Excellent. Chris's Corner. We will continue this debate on the backside of this. The 5 o'clock hour is straight ahead at 5:07. At 5:07, we'll announce the winner of the St. Louis Conservative Christmas. We'll follow that up by a conversation with Dr. Aaron Hedlund at the Show Me Institute and the speaker stump speech. All straight ahead at 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.